Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Right now, we're pleased to be joined by two of the finest football guys in the country, Robert Mays and Kevin Clark. Phenomenal reads at the Ringer. Always fun to see you guys and interact with you. Appreciate you squeezing us in. I'm convinced you came here to drink beers together, not for this podcast you're doing. Am I partly correct?
We will not be drinking beers together.
We will get chicken later.
We're going to get hot chicken later,
yep.
And we're going to probably film it just because I think people enjoy our pain. We've done this before.
So you're going super hot?
Well, I think we have to do
as hot
one
as
of
we
them.
Can go.
We'll get one regular and one super hot just to, again, give people the pain.
Yeah, that'll be entertaining.
Mistake.
Oh,
mistake.
It's a huge mistake. I understand that.
Let's hit on a couple things you guys have written lately. Robert, you wrote about John Gruden and Derek Carr. And there was perception early, and flesh this out for us. Gruden's a tough love, very demanding of his quarterbacks. We saw that polish Rich Gannon into an MVP. But other guys will crumble under it. And there's a perception amongst people who don't know him, like me, that Derek Carr might not be built for that. How much of a worry is there?
It seemed like he's enjoying it so far, and who knows how long the grading will take until it really gets to be too much. But in the initial stages, it feels like he's enjoyed how much the atmosphere there has changed. It's so quarterback-centric, and you hear this with quarterbacks all the time. When they have a head coach come in that is an offensive-minded, quarterback-centric person, how much it changes their day-to-day life and how much they like it. So right now, it feels like he's enjoying just the entire atmosphere and how the dynamic has changed there. So maybe that won't last very long, but for the moment, he seems to be having a good time.
Robert Mays and Kevin Clark, our guests from The Ringer. Kevin, you had the piece recently on the history of the Wildcat.
Yeah.
Where do you start when you start to discuss the history of a play call?
You start in the SEC if you're talking about the Wildcat. I mean, I called Houston Nutt. He was my first call on this. And it just goes back. Obviously, you can start tracing the Wildcat back to Pop Warner, literally Pop Warner 100 years ago. But really, Gus Malzahn, David Lee, that Arkansas-LSU game put it on the map. And then a year later, David Lee's running the quarterbacks of the Dolphins. He puts it in. And I think there's a lot of stuff. I'm not saying RPOs and all the stuff we see on Sunday wouldn't have happened without them. What I'm saying is it was the first time that an NFL team looked at college and said, we're just going to steal this. And that opened up a whole lot of stuff we see on Sundays for the next decade.
You guys have only spent one day here. I always tell people, you know, watch. Like, you guys didn't see Corey Davis today.
Right.
So into the season, you're not going to be referring back to the day you saw Corey Davis. And somebody might have made a great catch today, and it tends to have guys tend to have some bias towards the thing that happened to happen on the day that they're there. But given that, what kind of impression on you from conversations or what you've seen today?
The most important thing to me and what I'm most interested in with this team is just how their offense is going to look schematically. And a couple of things I saw that were encouraging. You know, you have Derrick Henry lining up out wide and motioning into the backfield. You have half the plays I saw probably out of the corner of my eye were play action. You have quarterback drills that are specifically designed to work on play action. And when I'm envisioning the best version of this offense, it has to do with their running backs being interchangeable in a way in order to play with perception. And it has to do with using tons more play action this team used a year ago. Marcus Mariota was the most effective play action quarterback in the NFL last season. And they used it like the 10th most amount.
Now, Malarkey said that he was that good because there's a limit to how much you can do it. Is that ridiculous?
Sure.
For you?
Let's look at the best offenses in the NFL for the last 3 years. Who was the number one play action percentage quarterback in the league last year? Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Who was it 2 years ago? Matt Ryan. So as much as that may be the company line, the best teams and the most efficient teams use it the most. So maybe you want to kind of mirror those percentages.
How prehistoric, Kevin, was this? Prehistoric is the word that floats around. When you watched this offense last year, what were you thinking?
It could have been worse. I think. Here's the thing. Mike Malarkey did himself no favors. Because I would come down here and I'd say, hey, how much college stuff, spread stuff, market stuff that Marcus Mariota is comfortable with, how much are you going to run of that? And he would say, none. And he would kind of stand up and say, I'm going to do what I've been doing for 20 years. I'm going to do what I did in Pittsburgh. And then you have to print it because he said it. And quite frankly, it's funny. And then people say, oh, he's a caveman. I mean, they did run read option stuff. They did run some. I mean, they ran RPOs. It wasn't, it wasn't Chip Kelly, but it wasn't, John Fox either.
You know, it's not as simple. We've discussed a lot about the Rams offense, and it's not as simple as saying, okay, you bring in LaFleur, you run that offense, they have the pieces and personnel to make it work quickly. But do you guys sense that the pieces are in place to eventually get there to what we saw a bit last year from L.A.?
I think that it's going to be a kind of a middle ground between what the Falcons were a couple years ago and what the Rams were last year, because I was talking, LaFleur today was discussing the fact that when they got to L.A. last year, they didn't set out to use 11 personnel and three receivers on 85% of their plays. It just so happens to be the players they had there were conducive to using that kind of approach.
Yep.
Here, you have a team that's kind of been systematically put together over the past two seasons to not be that. You have a lot of two tight ends. You have a lot of two running backs. And if you look at Atlanta and what Shanahan has been both there and in San Francisco, you see a lot of that. You see a lot of heavier personnel in order to throw things like that. So I feel like just looking at what the Rams were and saying they're going to be that is misguided because it's mostly based on personnel.
Well, and I think the other misconception is they're not going to run it as much as they did. This is an offense that will run it. I mean, if we're going back to both the Rams and the Falcons, the Rams, Todd Gurley, great player. I get it. Carried it 280 times last year. With the Falcons, Devontae Freeman carried it 227 times the year that LaFleur was there. And Coleman also got plenty of touches that year. So it still goes through the run. With the addition of Deion Lewis to this offense, can he give the same flair that Gurley gave in the passing game? I think that, to me, is the big question mark on how quickly things can begin to go downhill for this offense.
No one is Todd Gurley right
Correct.
Now. I mean, Le'Veon Bell is up there, but, I mean, Todd Gurley, there's a reason that the highest paid running back in the NFL was making $8 million, and then Todd Gurley just completely shattered that. Okay, Deion Lewis is not making $14 million a year, and there's a reason for that. I still think he's very talented. I think we saw in the passing game that he can be that. I think the modern running back, what fascinates me, is that it's more important maybe than ever in the whole sense that it's play action, it's out of the backfield, and it's running. Okay, so maybe 20 years ago, it was more of a rushing, you know, we're just going to get 1,700 yards thing. And now I think if you look at all the different things running backs have to do, the threat of play action, freezing the linebackers, freezing the safeties, I think running back is very, very important in 2018.
With the running and just the number of rushes, I think the important thing to look at is twofold. It's twofold. One, it's about being able to have some legitimacy and some credence to your play action. You have to run the ball often enough in order to make sure that you can use play action and have it be effective. And two, it's not about how many times you run, it's when you're running. And that's the most important thing when you look at the Rams. That team ran the ball a ton, but they threw it all the time on first down. So using Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis interchangeably in the passing game in order to give teams absolutely no tells for when you're running and passing, those are the types of things that this team is going to do differently than they did a year ago.
That's Robert Mays, and we're with Kevin Clark, also of The Ringer. When a reporter gets the Malcolm Butler Super Bowl story, will he or she win the Pulitzer?
I mean, they won the Pulitzer, but they may be on Bill Belichick's like red list for the rest of their lives. So I'm not sure it'd be worth it.
Right? Yeah, here's what I understand. Why doesn't the Times take all these people investigating Trump and just put one of them on the Malcolm Butler thing?
And finish
you
know, it
just
off.
This is like, a better use of resources.
Just find out what the heck happened to this guy.
Would you have been concerned with giving him $30 million guaranteed because something was up? Or do you lean towards Belichick being Belichick? And he's been outstanding out here. He makes plays.
I'm not worried about it. I feel like it's kind of why the choice was so baffling to begin with is that he's such a modern NFL corner. You need players that are able to move inside, outside, cover tight ends if they need to, the flexibility in their hips, not just these big guys that run down the sideline. The game isn't that played that way anymore. So you need a guy like him who can just kind of move all around the field. And that's why when I look at some of the guys getting this money, like Tremaine Johnson getting more than him, I think there's value in that. I think he's a better corner.
I also sort of feel like the absence of a story makes me feel a little bit better, because if it was something heinously bad, you don't even really hear rumors. You hear sort of like, oh, if something with this, but you never hear like a specific terrible rumor in a very rumor mongery league. And so I just kind of think I'm leaning towards it being Belichick being a weirdo.
To clarify, Butler sat here and told us last week that the Titans never directly asked him about it at all. So,
and we know they are tied to New England. Boys, a real pleasure. Enjoy your chicken. We will look for the podcast. Robert Mays and Kevin Clark, two of the best reads on the NFL at The Ringer. Be sure you're following them and check them out, and we will certainly hound them to have them on again because it's great. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.